Hi, I'm Valerie, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetic industry. This is episode 307. I'm your host, Valerie George, and with me today is Perry Romanowski. Hi, Perry.
Hello, Valerie.
On today's show, we're going to answer questions about, could Vegemite be a dupe for the Biologique Recherche favorite mask, Vivant? Why does getting hair dyed in the salon take longer than when you do it at home? What's a good treatment for melasma? And have cosmetic ingredients been safety tested enough? But first, our inane chit-chat. Perry, you have a lot going on tomorrow, right?
I do have a lot going on. Tomorrow I am riding a bike ride for charity, a 100K.
Very cool.
I drive from like south side of Chicago all the way into Indiana, so it should be fun. And you know, a lot of our fans had donated. I raised a pretty good amount of money, I guess.
Oh, that's so incredible! Oh, thanks everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, it occurs to me I haven't actually ridden a bike in almost 2 years.
Oh my gosh. And you're going to go ride on this 100 kilometer bike ride tomorrow?
Well, I made sure I had air in my tires. So so the air in my tires. So the bike works. And, you know, it's like, it's riding a bike, right? How hard could it be?
I would say that's impressive. But do you know what would be even more impressive?
What's that?
If you joggled while you did the marathon. Is that in your plans?
You'd be joggling while biking?
Yes.
Yeah, I had thought of it, but it's probably a little too dangerous.
I would guess.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to break in here and tell you that the 100K plus bike ride I did on Friday was a great success, and I made it through just fine, except for some sore legs, of course. And I want to thank everyone who donated. You personally helped us raise over $4,000 and contributed to an event that generated over $250,000 for research. Thank you so much. Okay, now back to the show.
You know what I'm going to also do, though?
What?
I'm going to remember to put on sunscreen.
Good. That's good.
Because this is strange. I was at the beach last weekend with my sisters and mother. And, you know, I put on sunscreen right when we got there. And then I kind of forgot to put it on. And now I have these blasted cold sores because I get these sunburn blisters. Whenever I get a sunburn, I get these blisters. It is driving me nuts. It's probably the worst sunburn I've had in, I don't know, 10 years.
Well, I hope you learned your lesson.
I did learn my lesson. I'm going to put sunscreen on during the bike tomorrow.
Oh, good. Well, speaking of learning lessons, this week I got to volunteer at a science camp for 8th grade girls called Tech Trek. I don't know if you remember a few years ago. I don't know if we talked about it, but basically it's a camp to keep young girls interested in sciences, and there's a lot of different programs that they have going on there.
Oh, sounds cool.
Yeah, like coding, a little paleontology section, and then I helped an industry colleague put on a cosmetic science segment where everyone got to make their own cold process lotions. So it was a lot of fun. Yes. Yeah.
I love that cold process lotion. So it's just a super absorbent polymer you mix together oil and water, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. That's a good demonstration and, you know, emulsion technology. How fascinating.
Yeah. Hopefully there's some future cosmetic chemists out of it.
Absolutely. And the kids they love to make lotions like that.
They do, especially when they get to pick their own fragrance.
Did you guys put preservatives in them?
We did. Actually, one person refused the preservative. And I said, well, you don't really have an option because the product isn't safe without it. It will grow.
Oh.
Bacteria, yeast, and mold. You need a broad spectrum preservative. And they, you know, grumpily accepted my drops of phenoxyethanol and ethyl hexylglycerin.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I wish you a ton of luck on your bike ride tomorrow. Can't wait to hear about it. And it's so cool that our fans helped contribute to the good cause that you have.
It is. Well, I do have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which will be a challenge.
Oh my gosh. Well, let's head over to Beauty Science News in that case. I think we both saw the same story this week.
This story is about J&J has come out with a acne care based on their Band-Aid brand.
I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I kind of thought they would have already done this.
Like
but,
100 years ago, because that's how people were already using Band-Aids. They were putting acne treatment on a Band-Aid and then putting it on their face.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it required them to get this idea to actually make a product by it. TikTok.
Oh, gosh. TikTok's running the world. It took TikTok to get them to do that.
Yeah, the story says Johnson & Johnson R&D team creates specialized hydrocolloid bandage to treat pimples informed by viral TikTok trend.
Oh, my God.
There's so many terrible trends on TikTok, but I guess there's some good ones, right?
Yeah.
So according to the story, J&J has launched their social media-inspired product. It's a new way to address blemishes using their Band-Aid HydroSeal bandages.
Well, I think it's a new way for Johnson & Johnson. You know, zip patches have been around a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So they were saying to leverage what was going viral on TikTok, which apparently there was more than 263 million views of hydrocolloid on TikTok.
Oh, what? My gosh. Are you getting the vibe that, like, a bunch of old dudes finally caught on that this is a thing, and then they put out this press release thinking they invented, like, the coolest thing, and then it's like zit stickers have been around for a few years, at least.
Yeah, there is kind of that vibe about it.
Oh. Well, anyway, I'm glad they did it.
Yeah, well, they say, according to one of their developmental teams, when we saw the trend, we gathered wound care and skin care health experts and scientists to really understand how the skin was behaving. Yeah, all those TikTokers did that too, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So apparently there are these blemish patches coming from J&J. Yeah, and we'll see how that goes.
You know, I was speaking with an industry colleague of ours, Kelly, and she brought up a really good point. Will consumers find this in the Band-Aid aisle or the skincare aisle?
Well, that's a very good question. I guess they'll probably be Band-Aid, right?
I don't know. Is this an opportunity for Band-Aid to segue into other areas?
Or some of the store brand products can make their own knockoff of that, right?
Yeah.
The store brand Band-Aids. What is a Band-Aid that's not a Band-Aid? Is it like
I think it's
adhesive strip or something?
An adhesive bandage.
Bandage.
Yeah. And in the UK, they're called plasters.
Plasters? Wow.
Yeah. I remember going into a drugstore when I was at In Cosmetics London, which is a trade show, and I desperately needed Band-Aids, and the guy was like, plasters, and I was like, I literally have no idea what you're talking about. And I was like, I showed him like a picture, and then he pointed me in the right direction. I couldn't really understand
He's
him.
He's like, first take the lift up to the queue, and you can get your plasters.
Yeah, plasters, yeah.
Well, I did not know that. Well, good luck to J&J for really being innovative and just copying what people are doing on TikTok already. But, you know, that is how a lot of innovation happens in the beauty business.
That's how it works.
We kind of look around and see what weird thing consumers are doing and say, can we turn that into a product?
Yeah, but usually you don't pretend you're the first to bring it to market and that you had to really right. understand what this skin infestation was that was occurring right, on right. people's faces. But
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure they did a big, deep research dive on that one.
Oh my gosh. In TikTok. They did the research in TikTok. I'm just kidding. Congratulations to J&J. We did have one cool listener comment, listener feedback write in.
Yeah, Helene sent in a picture of her grandson. And she says, my grandson has my straight on top curly in the back hair, and you might enjoy a spectacular bedhead. No Epsom salts involved. We had answered a question for her some episodes ago.
Oh, cool.
But she sent the picture, and
he's
he
so
just has
cute.
Some wild curled up hair.
Only in the back, though. The top is stick straight, and in the back, it's just super curly. It's really cute.
Yeah. It's good. You know, I got my hair cut today.
It looks good, I was going to say.
Well, thank you. But I realize how every time I go, I have less hair. But I suppose I am in my 50s now. It's going to
catch up with you. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, but it's still all brown, so I don't have any gray.
I think it looks great. You're ready for your bike ride tomorrow.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, we know we got to get you over to bed, so let's start answering some beauty questions.
All right, our first question comes to us from Chrissy. Hi, Beauty Brains. Could Vegemite be a dupe for the biologic... You know what? You said this much better at the top of the show.
Biologique recherche.
Wow. Fancy. Favorite mask of Avant. They seem the same to me. Do you have any thoughts about the line in general? Cheers, Chrissy from Miami. All right, so this product... the first ingredient, which is strange, is a yeast extract?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, what's Vegemite is like some food thing, right?
Yeah, one of our...
I know it from that that song, right?
Well, one of our Australian listeners educated us about Vegemite a few years ago, I think. And it's a food stuff that you would put on toasted bread. And it is from leftover brewer's yeast extract. And then it's flavored and spiced with a multitude of things. So... I wonder...
Wait, do you know that song I'm talking
no,
about?
No, mm-mm.
I come from the land down under.
Yeah.
I eat a Vegemite sandwich.
Yeah, right? But is that one of the lyrics?
Yeah, they say, like a Vegemite sandwich.
I'm going to have to listen to that song again. Yeah, right. I didn't catch that ever. Wow. Okay.
Well, there you go. I said, do you speak my language?
He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. Well, anyway, yeah, so Vegemite is this brewer's yeast-based product, and the Biologique Recherche Vivant mask has yeast extract as the first ingredient, and I think that's where they're similar and dissimilar at the same time.
Because yeast extract can be a lot of different things?
Yeah, it's kind of a generic name to describe the chemistry of how an ingredient was produced, but the yeast could be producing anything, and it's the extract from the yeast. So I'm not sure specifically what the Biologique Recherche product is, but I do know it's not leftover brewer's yeast from anything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, chemically, they could be wildly different.
Yeah, they could. And there's also a whole bunch of other stuff that I definitely would not eat in the Recherche product.
Right. So it has propylene glycol. It has a clay in there. It's clay for the mask, right?
Yep.
Vinegar, lactic acid.
Witch hazel extract. Yeah, some gums. Yeah. So I guess I could see how they're kind of maybe similar in texture, but they may do different things. Although I did see... a post of someone who actually took Vegemite and used it as a mask, but I wasn't sure if it was a joke or not.
I mean, I guess you could, but this product has clay in it, which Vegemite's not going to have clay in it.
Correct.
And it seems like the basis for this product, this mask, is it's a clay mask. And so it's not going to have that ability to draw out whatever clay can draw out, of your pores, theoretically.
It's not going to have the minerals. Vegemite won't have the minerals that clays may infuse into your skin.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't say they're like it's a dupe, but
yeah.
But on the other hand, as far as I see masks going, I think it's more of an experience than actually any real benefit to your skin.
Yeah,
in my view.
Yeah. Although you probably wouldn't want to eat Vegemite after you've worn it as a mask either, right?
No. And you know what else you wouldn't want to do? Let your cat go and lick your face because it eats everything. And then it gets crazed. I don't know.
Yeah. You would. Are you throwing shade on Ted right now?
This cat gets nuts. He eats food and then he has to play for an hour. Like he's insane. And then he goes to sleep. Sure, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, thanks so much for the question, Chrissy. So long story short, no, they are not dupes. But if we've misunderstood and you're not talking about the delicious food spread Vegemite, please let us know. And we will try to answer the question more succinctly.
And I think the song's from Asia, Toto, Land Down Under.
Who's that? Yes, it sounds familiar. I just had no idea they were talking about a Vegemite
I'd
sandwich.
Come from the land down. I'm sure one of our fans will let us know. All right, next question. Oh, another, here's a question for you, Valerie. Uh-huh. A lot of people don't know, or our fans know, but people don't know, Valerie is one of the country's foremost experts in hair color. So if you have hair color questions, here's one for you. This one comes to us from Lindsay. Hi, why, when I dye my roots at the salon, I have to sit there for 40 minutes and it is washed out with shampoo? But when I dye it at home, and I use the Clairol root cover, it only has to sit on for 15 minutes, and it says to only condition. These are both permanent colors. Well, a little color technology there, huh?
Yeah, that's actually very interesting that they say to not wash out and with shampoo and only condition. But I would say that there's two primary differences between the Clairol root touch-up 10-minute hair color and a permanent hair color that is used at a salon that is applied to the roots of your hair. The first difference, obviously, you've pointed out, Lindsay, is time. Typically, a permanent hair color you want to let process, you know, for 30, 35, 40 minutes on the roots. You would rinse out the color, or your stylist would, and then you would shampoo the excess color out to remove any staining from your scalp, or to remove any excess dye from the exterior of the hair shaft. The Clairol Root Touch-Up at home is a 10-minute hair color, and you apply it, leave it on for 10 minutes, rinse with water, and then condition. While they're both technically permanent hair colors from a chemistry perspective, they are both ammonia-based hair colorants using oxidative dyes, and you have to use hydrogen peroxide to get them in. I would say you probably don't get the same longevity with the Clairol Root Touch-Up. And in fact, they only advertise the color lasts up to 3 weeks, which is not a very long time. A salon permanent hair color would last up to 6 weeks, depending on how your hair regrows out. And even then, it'll still be in the hair. But at 6 weeks, you have enough regrowth to where you want to get it covered up. I would imagine on this Clairol Root Touch-Up, you probably have some fading and you need your entire regrowth touched up with it.
So this would be, is this a demi-permanent color, you would think?
Well, it's a permanent, but the thing is, with hair color, time is everything. You need time for the dyes to penetrate into the hair. And in 10 minutes, you just do not get a whole lot of penetration, so the dyes don't get very far in. So they're not going to last as long because they're closer to the exterior of the hair. Additionally, you're not shampooing out any excess dye. You're just rinsing it and then sealing it over with a conditioner. And so I would imagine that's to help give the color a little more impression of having more dye uptake than it really does, and you're going to lose more quickly over time.
What I am curious about, if she did just use the at-home one for longer, if she put it on for 40 minutes, would it last longer?
Yeah, I think it probably would because you're going to get more penetration. Of course, it depends on how the dyes are built. This was meant to be a 10-minute color. So the dyes might be not shaded in a way that allow for a really beautiful, natural-looking coverage if you left it on for more than 10 minutes. I think this is really designed just to get you in between your regular salon visits, or you know, maybe you're doing it regularly, but I don't think so.
Well, the roots grow back so fast.
They do. Yeah. 4 to 6 weeks. Yeah, so this is really just meant to hold you over, I think. Yeah. So that's really it. From a chemistry perspective, they could be similar, but I believe that the permanent salon hair color probably is formulated one a little differently, maybe to have more alkalinity to penetrate into the hair. You're leaving it on for a longer amount of time. And the Clairol Root Touch-Up is only guaranteed to last up to 3 weeks, which is not very long at all. So I think you would get two different results over time.
All right, next question.
Our next question comes to us from Becky in Connecticut. Hi, Valerie and Perry. Have you heard of any products that lighten stubborn hyperpigmentation from melasma? Still on my long and expensive journey to find effective treatments. Thanks.
Oh boy, this is a challenging one.
It's very tough because everyone's skin is different, everyone's melasma is different, and some people think they have melasma and they don't. Or some people think they just have pigmentation, they actually have melasma. It's very tough.
Yeah, and sometimes I get these spots and I'm like, well, what is that? And you're like, well, as long as it's not cancer, I'm okay right now.
Yeah.
But this is one of those questions that you know, ultimately the answer is go to a dermatologist and get their advice. There are things that cosmetics can do. Treating diseases is not one of those things. Now, there are some over-the-counter stuff that you can do, and there's some behavioral things you can do, for example. But according to the American Academy of Dermatology, there is no one single treatment for melasma. It's just, it takes a treatment takes a combined, you know, protect yourself from the sun. Maybe there's some medications. Maybe there's some topical stuff to apply.
And the thing is, if you truly have melasma, it goes past the outer layers of your skin and it's super deep down. And as Perry said, a cosmetic treatment is not going to impact that. Yes, you can use vitamin C and niacinamide and hydroquinone, and those may help lighten your skin. And in fact, a doctor may prescribe you prescription strength versions of those and they would work. Right. But the stuff you're likely buying from a cosmetics brand probably isn't going to effectively treat the melasma deep down. And the only way to know what the best and effective, most effective treatment for you is to go to a dermatologist and understand why it's occurring, if it's temporary, if it's permanent, and what things do they have in their tool belt that can really help tackle it.
Yeah, they try stuff like chemical peels, microneedling, some laser treatments. There's a few things that they can try, but like I said, it's very specific to an individual, and not the same thing doesn't work for everybody.
And sometimes nothing works for people, and that's just sometimes how the dice roll.
There is that.
But I hope there's something for Becky.
I hope there's something for Becky for sure. Valerie, we have an audio question, and we'll wrap this up with this audio question.
Hi, I'm Jordan. I'm from England. I'm a new listener, and I actually stumbled across your show while I was looking into the toxicity of chemicals in the household and in skincare products, and I sort of got sucked into the clean movement. And then I heard your side of the story and discovered actually there's not a lot of scientific research to back a lot of those claims. So my question is whether you think that there has been enough research done into the ingredients we use on a daily basis in our skincare. I'm a little bit worried about products that we've used in the past as consumers, and then they've gone on to be proven to be dangerous and banned by our governments. Could you please explain how much testing goes into the ingredients we use in skincare and beauty products before they are used commercially? Thank you so much, and I really appreciate the work you do.
Well, thank you. I was hoping she would have said plasters.
But I was going to say, first and foremost, Jordan, I would like to apologize at the way I said plaster earlier in the show. Hope you forgive me.
It's a very good question. But before we get to the question, you know, I was out at dinner today, and I ordered a chicken sandwich.
Okay.
And my wife ordered fries. I ordered fries. I like fries. But then the waitress says, "Are you sure you want that extra set of fries? This is a really tall sandwich." I was like, "You know what? Forget the fries, but I do want a ladder." Okay, shall we go to the question? All right. This is an interesting question. But
it is.
The first part of this question I want to talk about.
Yeah.
She talked about ingredients that we used to use and now they're banned.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, are there a lot of those things?
I would say in hair color and fragrance, I think there are several of them. And this is because we've gathered more and more data over the years about how these ingredients have impact on us. We also have a better ability through instrumentation and through development of different testing methodologies to get better data over time. And so for these reasons, things that are heavily studied, hair colorants, perfume ingredients, are constantly getting looked at and evaluated as better and better testing capabilities come to mind. Or sometimes people will just revisit information and say, you know what, we never really banned this before. People have stopped using it. And, you know, does anyone want to save this, or are we just going to restrict the heck out of this, and it will just get on a restricted list or on a non-approved list? So I think it's a matter of those things.
Right. A lot of the ingredients that are banned in the EU, for example, are things that you just wouldn't use in cosmetics. Mm-hmm. And then the US, we don't really ban that many things. We only ban stuff that maybe was in cosmetics at some point, and there was only 11 of those ingredients. But do you think just in general, are products, say, safer than they were 30 years ago?
Yeah, I think in general, cosmetics are safer than they have ever been, and they're just going to continue to get safer. And it's not because of these non-governmental organizations making products safer. I think people are using things that have really robust safety profiles, and we're just continuing to use those things.
Yeah, as far as industry's motivation goes, they're motivated not to produce, you know, dangerous products. A lot of times people will compare the cosmetic industry to, say, the cigarette industry or something. And the big difference there is there's no safe cigarettes, right?
Yeah.
There's the product itself, that they had to lie about it because otherwise nobody could use the product. For beauty products, you know, you can make safe beauty products. So there's no incentive to continue to make things that are unsafe. And the beauty industry is very reactive to any bad press. If there's bad press about an ingredient, whether it's dangerous or not, the industry does generally get away from it, especially if it's easy to get away from. Now, the problem with clean beauty is they're going after, like, all chemicals, and there's no good replacements. So that's where the pushback's coming. But, you know, when I was working, we used to use Loramide DEA.
Yeah.
In shampoo, and it worked great for that, but there was some concern about nitrosamines and residual nitrosamines in DEA, and pretty much overnight the industry, at least the big players, got away from using Loramide DEA and switched to cocamidopropyl propylbutane.
Yeah,
the product works a little different, but for the most part it was an easy switch. So when it's an easy switch, it's done. When it's a hard switch, like when we're running out of preservatives, well, then it gets a little more challenging.
And I will say that's the one area we're actually becoming less safe in, because we're switching to preservatives that have very little safety data or use data behind them, because there's unsubstantiated fears over preservatives with minute amounts of formaldehyde present in them, or parabens or whatnot. And so we're using preservation systems that have a high propensity for contact dermatitis or have an inability to combat strains of Burkholderia sepatia, which is a really pathogenic gram-negative bacteria that is dangerous for people. I think that's one area where we're getting less safe.
Did you practice saying that word?
I have experience saying that word, and it's bad experience. So
you have do you have a proclivity for saying the names of bacterial species? It's one of your superpowers.
But I will say that's one area where I think we're getting less safe, because these ingredients have less safety data behind them and less usage data, whereas things like DMDM hydantoin have 40 or 50 years of safe use behind them.
Yeah, that is the big challenge. Now, as far as how much testing goes into products, in the United States, it's illegal to sell unsafe products. So the big companies, at least, are motivated due to, like, trying to avoid lawsuits and things to ensure that the products are safe, or at least safe enough that nobody could, you know, sue them in court and prove that they're unsafe.
Yeah.
Smaller companies don't do that kind of testing. But they just kind of rely on what the raw material suppliers do. And again, the raw material suppliers are not motivated to make unsafe stuff, because if anything gets a hint that it's going to be unsafe, nobody was going to use it. So,
yeah. And it costs.
And also, if you're a raw material supplier and you're in Europe, you want to sell your ingredients in Europe, they have a lot more safety testing that's required for REACH. Other restrictions of chemicals to sell stuff in the EU. So for this is a pretty global industry, and there's a lot of testing that has to go on.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I think a lot of it's happening at the raw material suppliers, as you mentioned, doing basic toxicology testing, phototoxicity testing, etc., not just stability testing of the ingredient. And then also on the finished product side, as you mentioned, I think the safety testing and validation is really happening on the bigger brand side. The small brands, I think, are just doing smaller safety testing. Maybe some are doing, you know, the phototoxic work, the, right, you know, ophthalmologic work.
I mean, one of the assumptions that companies will make is they say, well, if the raw materials were tested and they were safe, then that means my whole formula is safe. Sometimes it's not a very good assumption, but yeah, I could see a small company startup that, you know, safety testing can be expensive.
Yeah.
And so I could see them sort of not doing
that. And in a lot of places, for example, the United States, Canada, Mexico, pre-market approval is not required. So, you know, it's very easy to just rely on, oh, well, these things are used, they're very frequently used, and you go to market. But in the EU, where pre-market approval is required, you have to have a third-party toxicologist safety assessor review the product for safety. And I think that's something that's very important to do as well.
Yeah, I would agree. So, Jordan, I don't think you really need to worry about whether the products are safe or not, especially if it's coming from big companies. They're tested, they're as safe. And really, as consumer products go, cosmetics are one of the more safe consumer products there are. You know, it's not safe, those scooter things.
Yeah.
You ever fall off of one of those?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Your health insurance might not cover it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, you know what that sound is, Perry? That's my yawn saying we got to get you to bed.
Yes, indeed. I got that big ride tomorrow.
Oh gosh. Well, good luck.
I'll get this show up soon. But yeah. Yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah. Maybe I should have trained.
You're going to be just fine. Or you won't be. Yeah. We'll find out.
We'll find out.
All right. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone.
Hey everyone, the Beauty Brains are on Patreon. If you want to support the show and keep us ad-free, go to patreon.com/thebeautybrain and subscribe at any level.
If you get a chance, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And speaking of questions, if you have a question and you want to hear your voice on here like Jordan did, just record it on your smartphone and email it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
Also, follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at thebeautybrains2018. On Twitter, we're at thebeautybrains. And we have a Facebook page.
And apparently, if we want to convince Johnson & Johnson to launch something, we should do something on our TikTok.
We definitely should. Well, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens.